The Water Quality Supply and Treatment Subcommittee will now come to order. Missy, please call the roll.
Chair Stevenson?
Here.
Vice Chair Maggard?
Here.
Ranking Member Hart?
Here.
Representative Altman?
Here.
Representative Asabe?
Here.
Representative Bell? Representative Brackett?
Here.
Representative Cassell?
Here.
Representative Dunkley?
Here.
Representative Gonzalez-Pittman?
Present.
Representative Gossett-Seidman?
Present.
Representative Henson?
Here.
Representative Oberdorf?
Yes, ma'am.
Representative Robinson?
Here.
Representative Snyder?
Here.
Representative Temple?
Here.
Representative Waldron?
Here.
Representative Yeager?
Here.
We have a quorum.
Thank you. Before we begin, I would like to introduce Jean Curtin, who's new to our policy team for our subcommittee. Jean comes to us also working on the Hurricane Committee, so she may already be a familiar face, and we're really grateful to have her serving as our policy chief. So this is a new resource for you. I know Alex and Tiffany and the rest of the team, they're all working together, just like we are as members, to work on these issues before us. So welcome, Jean. Before we begin, I want to remind you to make sure your electronic devices are turned off and placed on silent mode. There's no fine, but it's so embarrassing when it happens. Good afternoon, members. I hope you enjoyed lunch. I hope we have an agenda that will keep you awake. On today's agenda, we have two presentations, and as I said last meeting, the first year will consist of quite a bit of education, so that we are prepared to make decisions and recommendations now to protect and enhance Florida for future generations. As we move on to the first presentation, I'd like to mention that I'm very grateful to have Anna DeSercio, Chief of Staff for the Florida Department of Environmental Protection, here today. She is pinch hitting for her boss, the secretary, who has been called away and is probably doing a press conference at this very moment. So we're very grateful to have her here today. She's going to give us some highlights of the state's recent accomplishments. Some of you may have seen the release by the secretary, but it was rather impressive. I thought it's a good way to start with a difficult subject of how much work is already going on, and there's a lot of good work going on for Florida's environment and for Florida's water. We'll have time after the presentation for questions, and Ms. DeSercio, you are recognized.
Hello, everyone, and thank you, Chair Stevenson, members of the committee. It's great to be here today. As Chair Stevenson mentioned, I'm Anna DeSercio. I'm the Chief of Staff of the Department of Environmental Protection. We're excited to be here to share the opportunity about all that we've been doing over the last 4 years. So as you all know, DEP is the state's lead agency for environmental management. To support this mission, we have over 3,000 full-time employees at the agency that are stationed throughout the state. So we've got our headquarters in Tallahassee, as well as 6 regulatory district offices and 175 state parks, as well as 42 aquatic preserves. In addition to attorneys, accountants, and administrative professionals, our staff is comprised of a wide variety of environmental scientists and experts, including hydrologists, engineers, biologists, and many of whom have spent decades studying and protecting Florida's natural resources. The department, we'll start with a kind of departmental overview so you can understand a little bit more about how our department is organized. So we've got 3 primary areas: ecosystems restoration programs, regulatory programs, which is the heart of kind of our regulatory footprint, as well as land and recreation, which you guys are probably familiar with, our state parks program, which is a revenue generator for the state. So we'll start off with our ecosystems restoration. This is probably the area that you guys will become the most familiar with through the subject matter of this committee. Our ecosystem restoration programs work to protect and improve water quality and aquatic resources, including America's Everglades, Florida's iconic springs, and our coastal resources. They also work with our communities and local governments, as well as other agencies, to work on water quality restoration, as well as water quantity. We also provide funding assistance for water restoration and infrastructure projects and coordinate the protection of Florida's submerged lands and coastal areas through our ecosystems restoration. So specifically, these programs include the Division of Water Policy and Ecosystem Restoration. They have been charged with expediting our Everglades restoration projects under this governor. They also assist in the development and implementation of our statewide water management policy, including alternative water supply projects. Our Office of Resilience and Coastal Protection was created in the governor's first executive order in 1912. That office has grown significantly since the governor took office. One of the largest programs that they have now is the Resilient Florida Program, which was created 2 years ago and has received significant funding through this legislature over the last couple of years. Our Division of Environmental Assessment and Restoration, this is where our water quality folks really get to work. They monitor and assess our surface and groundwater quality, as well as set our water quality standards and manage our state's water quality laboratory, which processes, you know, over 136,000 samples a year right now. So it's a significant footprint in assistance with local governments. They also work to develop our basin management action plans, which are the programs that we establish for restoring impaired waterways. And so those are done in conjunction with local governments. Additionally, the Division of Water Restoration Assistance, this is an area within the department that's also seen growth. They provide grants and loans to local governments, utilities, and other agencies to improve our water quality and quantity. One of the major programs within this area that they oversee is the wastewater grant program that was also established 2 years ago through Senate Bill 712. And that's a program that we now have regular funding source every year. And lastly, our Office of Environmental Accountability and Transparency, that was an office that was created through the governor's first executive order in 1912. Their focus is really to clearly communicate to the public data and research to better understand and implement solutions to water quality challenges. Protecting Florida Together is a website that we now own and operate at the department, where you can go and see real-time water quality monitoring dashboard. Under our next program area is regulatory programs. The department's regulatory programs work to safeguard our natural resources by overseeing permitting and compliance activities. The first Division of Water Resource Management, really large division within the agency, they oversee the National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System. This regulates point source discharges throughout the state, our public drinking water, underground injection, as well as our state 404 program, wastewater facilities, and phosphate mining. The Division of Waste has regulatory oversight over waste facilities as well as pollutant storage systems, and they also oversee contracts for the cleanup of sites contaminated with petroleum products and dry cleaning solvents. And lastly, our Division of Air monitors air quality and permits in sources of air emissions, and they've also been implementing the Volkswagen settlement, which is something that we received in 2019 and have invested in things such as electric vehicle charging stations and electric vehicle or electric buses, both transit and school. Additionally, in our regulatory programs division is the Florida Geological Survey. We've got a collection of scientists who collect, archive, and interpret geologic and hydrogeologic data. And they also have a geologic repository that houses 19,000 samples that cover about 2,500 miles. So it's quite the collection of geologic boreholes that help us to understand and interpret what's going on beneath the surface. And then lastly, our Division of Law Enforcement enforces our environmental laws. This program was also transferred from FWC to the department in Executive Order 1912. So this is an area that has really grown in the department as well. Our last major program area is land and recreation. Our land and recreation programs acquire and protect lands for preservation and recreation. They oversee our 175 state parks and trails and manage more than 12 million acres of public lands. Now we're getting into some of our major accomplishments over the last 4 years. When the governor took office, he set a goal of $2.5 billion towards water quality and Everglades restoration during his first term. This legislature and the governor have recognized, you know, the importance of Florida's water and how they are fundamental to our way of life. Without the support of the legislature, we would not have been able to not only achieve this goal, but surpass it. We were able to get appropriated $3.3 billion which is historic levels of funding for both Everglades restoration and water quality improvements. Because of this, we've been able to take action to expedite critical Everglades restoration project, protect our water resources, including quality and quantity, improve our state's resilience, and acquire lands to protect Florida's natural resources. This breaks down our funding for Everglades restoration. So as you can see, over the last 4 years, you've seen a significant increase in the investments that we're making for Everglades restoration. As a result of this investment, more than 50 Everglades restoration projects have either broken ground, achieved a major milestone, or finished construction since 2019. We're now sending more volume south thanks to the operation of our infrastructure, and we're hydrating the Everglades in ways that we haven't seen in decades. Salinity levels in Florida Bay are actually reaching their goals. Why is this important? Because healthy salinity levels help our healthy ecosystems. So also as a result of lake management and improved weather patterns and also these investments, we've been able to significantly reduce discharges to our estuaries. So recent Everglades restoration successes that we have celebrated under Governor DeSantis: completion of the C44 reservoir, which will help to impact nutrients that are sent over to the St. Lucie estuary, as well as completion of the old Tamiami Trail roadbed removal, which effectively blocked off historic water flows south to the Everglades. And as well as we continue to work on the Everglades Agricultural Area Reservoir Project that has two components. The state's component is full speed ahead. That is the stormwater treatment wetland component. The Army Corps has the reservoir. So on the state side, we continue to expedite these critical projects that are going to help to send more water south and reduce those discharges going to the estuaries. This continues to break down some of our further investments in water quality. This $1.6 billion is unprecedented. Again, it's through the legislature's commitment to this as well that has made this possible. So what you'll see on this slide is a breakdown of some of the areas of focus. I mentioned the wastewater grant program earlier. That's a program that we have created that will assist with septic to sewer conversions and upgrades to advanced wastewater treatment. Those are the types of projects that we're funding with some of this water quality funding. The first tranche of that wastewater grant funding was invested in the Indian River Lagoon, obviously recognizing some of the challenges that they are facing with their water quality. Springs restoration, we've seen consistent funding for Springs restoration, so we've been able to fund major projects with that, as well as Biscayne Bay. The legislature created the Biscayne Bay Commission 2 years ago and has also allocated $20 million annually to improvement of water quality within the bay. And so some of these nutrient reductions that you see on these slides are estimates based on the project information that we received from local government. So all of these things, we're working to get these in the ground and moving forward so that we can really start to see the impacts of the investments in future years. Another big focus of the administration over the last 4 years has been resilience. We have created the Chief Resilience Officer last year that was codified into law. We also created the Resilient Florida Program. We've invested nearly $1.1 billion in resilience over the first 4 years. This includes grants to local governments for adaptation projects so that we can address risk of coastal flooding and sea level rise, but also vulnerability assessments so that local governments can work to identify those critical assets that are in need of improved resilience. So this has been a really big effort, and we've seen a lot of growth in this area within the department, and I think we're going to make significant progress here moving forward. Land acquisition. So we've seen historic funding for land acquisition in recent years. We've got $600 million over the last 4 years. $300 million of that was for the Wildlife Corridor, which was also established within the last 2 years at the direction of the legislature. So over the last 4 years, this $600 million commitment is over five times the investment during the previous 4 years. And since 2019, we have acquired over 170,000 acres for conservation, which is nearly four times what was acquired in the previous 4 years. So we're seeing progress and movement on our land conservation as well, which all fits into the larger picture of environmental protection. state parks, also a big part of what the department does. We've got 175 state parks, which in the past 4 years, we've seen nearly 116 million visitors. We are the nation's first four-time winner of the National Gold Medal Award for Excellence for our state park system. And we see more than 32 million visitors annually with nearly $85 million in revenue. And I mentioned the transfer of our Division of Law Enforcement over to the Department from FWC in 2019. Another focus has been environmental crimes enforcement. We have been laser focused on this since the governor did transfer that program over to our department. We've criminally charged environmental violators with 124 felonies and 444 misdemeanors. We have also, in 2020, the legislature increased environmental fines for certain penalties by 50%. In sanitary sewer overflows, those crimes were doubled. So also another important tool in the toolbox. So as you can see, since 2019, Governor DeSantis and this legislature have taken unprecedented steps to effectively address our most pressing environmental issues. And I would be remiss if I did not mention that just last week, the governor did sign a new executive order effectively laying out his environmental agenda for the next 4 years to achieve even more now for Florida's environment. The executive order directs strategic action with a focus on accountability, sound science, progress, and collaboration, and proposes $3.5 million over 4 years for Everglades restoration and protection of our water resources. So that would surpass our previous goal by $1 billion. Obviously, we couldn't do this without you guys, so we look forward to continuing the momentum that we're seeing in Florida right now for our environmental resources. And that concludes my presentation.
Representative Snyder? Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thanks so much for being here. And let me first just start by saying thank you for the work that's being done at the agency, and always exciting to just see how Florida continues to lead on this front. And looking forward to hearing about the news that Secretary Hamilton has to share with us after today. Two questions, if I may, Madam Chair. The first is pertaining to land acquisitions, and I know there's a couple different avenues on how that happens. Could you just walk me through the process on how we can best advocate for projects in our area that we know, you know, if something is on the acquisition target list, you know, how that ranking schedule is made and what we can do to try and help be a difference maker on that?
First, I want to thank again Ms. DeSercio for being here. If these questions are, you know, maybe we need to leave them for another time, but if you have the answer to that, which you would like to provide it.
Okay, I'll give you a high level, and we can have our staff follow up with you with more detail on this, because there's a lot there. So our land acquisition process, the Florida Forever program, we've got projects identified, you know, within the Florida Forever program. Within those project boundaries are multiple individual projects. So within a project boundary, there could be 100 acquisitions that need to take place. And so getting onto the list is a pretty hefty process. You've got to go through ARG, and it's a willing seller program. So typically we find out about properties through our land acquisition partners. So you've got groups like the Nature Conservancy, Conservation Florida, Wildlife Corridor, where they help to identify land owners and acquisitions that might be ripe for purchase. And then we also get contact from willing sellers as well. So I think kind of having that input from those land organizations and helping to identify land for purchase can help to speed the process along, and would, because at the end of the day, it's a willing seller program. So we can't purchase land unless the seller is willing to do so. So
thank you. And I just will add, I was reading an Amy Baker's report, who's EDR, Economic and Demographic Research. And she mentioned that we have so much in our land acquisition program that at our current rates, it would take us like 700 years or something to acquire it all. So there is, it is an issue, and you know, I think they look sometimes in certain programs at threatened properties that are at risk of development and things like that, but it's a really good question, and there's a lot of really wonderful assets out there. But we do have about 31% of the area of the state of Florida in conservation presently, and that number goes up. But I would refer you, that's a good report, has some good summary information. I'm sure DEP website does as well. So thank you.
One more question, Madam Chair,
okay,
if I may.
Okay, certainly.
And thank you for that information. I'd love to sidebar with you as well, Madam Chair, and continue to learn more about that. Wondering also if you could provide maybe a high-level overview on just the BMAP process and kind of where, maybe if you have a percentage-wise on where, you know, some of those programs have kind of been identified, and maybe just an update on timeline on when completion, you know, of the, I don't even know what the right term is, the program, you know, for the BMAPs would be great.
Absolutely. Okay. So our BMAP program is one path toward restoration of an impaired water body. And so typically what you see is you've got an impaired water body that's been identified, and you'll set what's called a total maximum daily load. And so that is how much water, how many nutrients in the water that water can sustain without being impaired, right? And so the goal is through this BMAP process that you would be able to meet your TMDL again, and so restore that water body. And so it is a years-long process to establish a BMAP and a TMDL, and so that takes a lot of, you know, science, testing. We're determining what that appropriate level should be, but then also the BMAP process includes a lot of partnership with the local communities. And so a component of the BMAP is the strategies for restoration. So that includes projects that you will achieve to meet that goal. And so that requires a lot of work on the front end to identify those projects, and a lot of partnership as well with the local governments. And so that is why that kind of takes a years-long process. There's an alternative path as well called a reasonable assurance plan. And so that is typically where we haven't established a TMDL yet for that water body, but it's a little bit faster, where the local community is really engaged and they say, hey, you know what, we want to actually undertake some projects and we want to try this. So they enter into a reasonable assurance plan with the department, and it's kind of an alternative path to the BMAP program. I also know that you might get a presentation in more detail on this as well, so because it is a complicated process. Right now, we do have 33 BMAPs statewide. Those are updated every 5 years. In terms of completion of a BMAP, that could take as long as 20 years to achieve some of those restoration goals. So it really is a long-term strategy.
Great, great answer. Thank you. And Representative Cassell?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you very much for your presentation. Following up along the lines of what Representative Snyder was asking you about as it pertains to the BMAP, does the department have an opinion or research or data to identify how important it is for us to be able to deliver high quality water and make sure that it's available with regards to the need to convert septics to sewers?
So let me just make sure I understand the question. Do mm-hmm. we have data to inform where we should prioritize projects?
That's a great way of phrasing it. Okay. Yes, you asked a much better question than I did. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. So maybe? So through our BMAP process, obviously, it includes a list of projects, right, that we want to prioritize. We also know where impaired waterways are. And so you can target improvements to and subject to sewer conversions in areas where those impaired waterways are. I might have a more detailed information.
Yeah. We will have a full presentation, and it may even be more than one because we're still planning out. So I don't want to get too down in the weeds, especially since the chief is pinch hitting and doing a marvelous job. I mean, she's really got a tremendous grasp of the issues. But we'll get into that. Trust me, in detail.
Okay, because really my follow-up question was going to be related to those districts like mine, which don't have a BMAP plan available, but we have a serious issue with 40% of a city being on septic. So I will save that question. I do have a question on a different topic, Madam Chair.
And we have several more, but I will say, you know, I think you're on to the septic to sewer is an important step. It really is important. So you're recognized.
Thank you. Turning more to one of the things that I didn't see in the presentation, we know that obviously Florida, we have such a great economy that's built on fishing and the sale of our seafood. What, if anything, is the department doing to create and develop a human health criteria to regulate the toxic pollutants that we are finding in our fish?
Now, I'm not even sure if that's you or the public health department, the buildup in the, like any fish and but
yeah, that is us.
It is it you. Is. You got it too. Okay, you are big. You've got it all. That's awesome.
Yeah. So as you can imagine, that's quite an undertaking, and it's something that we had originally engaged on prior to the COVID-19 pandemic, because human health criteria are, you know, how much kind of toxins are in the water that is at an appropriate health level for people to consume, and those are typically established through a fish consumption survey, which you mentioned. And so we had originally begun the process of undertaking a new fish consumption survey. And then when the COVID-19 pandemic hit, eating patterns changed. People were eating out less. We were concerned that the data wouldn't be as reliable as it would need to be to establish something as important as this. So we've been working with the EPA right now, and we are in the process of developing a path forward on that. And stay tuned.
So important, such great questions. Representative Hart, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had just two questions. I know that we've put a lot of money into water quality, but I'm just trying to find out, we still have a serious issue with the quality of water here in Florida. Do we need to change policy, or do we need more money to help us?
I think that we have started the policy changes already. So you see that the last couple of years that we've really put a focus on investments in water quality. I think funding is going to be a critically important effort in that, because, you know, you see you've gotten point source pollution as well as non-point source solution. Septic to sewer, it's a big deal. We're also still putting septic tanks in the ground. So I think funding is going to be critically important as well. I do have to mention, though, I mean, water quality improvements don't happen overnight.
Right.
So the investments that we're making now are going to be really critical to what we're seeing, you know, 5-10 years down the road in our water quality.
Okay. One more question, Madam Chair. I noticed that I'm in the criminal justice, and I noticed that you had a lot of felonies and misdemeanors. And I was just wondering kind of what makes that up, and are we doing a serious educational push to ensure that people understand what those charges might look like if they do something they shouldn't?
You're recognized.
Thank you. So a lot of the violators, too, are they're not just individuals. They're wastewater treatment facilities, you know, so they're kind of more informed parties. And through our enforcement process, we don't just slap a fine on you on the first step. We issue a warning letter, which requires you to come to the table and talk to us. Maybe you have a good explanation for why a certain violation may have occurred, and then we'll adjust a fine accordingly. Sometimes we'll do in kind, where we'll say, hey, you're going to improve the infrastructure that led to this problem, so we'll, you know, allow for that in lieu of a fine. So
thank you. You had one in my area. That was so grievous. I hope that it got right on it. It was somebody had collected and people had paid, and then they dumped into retention ponds. And it, I mean, we get some really egregious stuff, and I'm sure that's the kind of thing that the bigger penalties are focused on. And it just makes you, that those are the kind of things that makes protecting water quality really difficult, because we have water everywhere, and it's work. It's real work. Representative Bell, where are you? There she is.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and also thank you for presenting on the fly here. Appreciate it. And mine's a follow-up question to Rep. Hart and the Chair's question on your regulatory programs. You said you have law enforcement. What power does law enforcement have that works under your purview?
So typical of other law enforcement officers. I mean, they're sworn officers, but their focus is on enforcing against environmental crimes. But then they also help when we have a hurricane. So they help to staff our ESF-10, and they're the ones who are looking at where are we having hazardous waste spills, how are we securing the area. And so it's less of like a, it's more of an environmental protection focus, and it's not focused on like people doing bad things, if that makes sense. So it's like we'll have boats in the water that are leaking gas as well, right? So you've got derelict vessels. So they're the ones that are trying to identify that, get the right hazardous waste people out there to accommodate that, et cetera.
Follow up. And my question's pointed to an issue that we have in Polk County, and I'm not going to say their name because it's in the court, but if they're violating and you've told them to stop no more and they keep dumping and you've told them no and now it's back in the court, you do not have arresting powers to go out and have them arrested, or is it our local law enforcement?
I don't know. I would have to check on that.
If you'll give it. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Bell. Representative Henson, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I honestly thought you had forgotten me. This has been very enlightening. Thank you so much. I've learned a lot of concerns I've had over the years and where to go to solve them. I have at least 4 water projects that some are septic to sewer, and now I know I can come to you to help me with that. I do have a problem in my area that I don't know where to go or what to do. For some time, we've been concerned about the Ocklawaha restoration. Are you familiar with the Ocklawaha?
Yes.
Yes.
This is just like a complex water quality question.
No.
No. Okay.
No. Okay. It's as much as I understand, they say it has to do with the Rodham Dam. Can you confirm or deny that and tell me what you think the problem is and how we can resolve it? Thank you, Madam Chair.
I think that will be, that's probably beyond this conversation, do you think?
Okay.
Do you have another question, Representative Henson?
I'd like to know how I'm going to get that question answered.
You can follow up with the staff afterwards. And go ahead. Do you have other questions?
No.
Okay. Representative Waldron.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for pinch hitting today. My question regards resiliency and the resiliency plan. If you could just give me a little bit more detail about where you are in the process of that plan and how and when it will be implemented. It's on page 11.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. So as part of the component of the Resilient Florida program, we have to submit a statewide flooding and sea level rise resilient plan on December 1st and a 3-year planning horizon. The first year's submission was last year. When I say last year, I mean 2021, not 2022. And so the legislature actually funded the entirety of that plan, so the $270 million and 76 projects. So this year's plan was a new 3-year planning horizon.
So you've begun to implement the resiliency, in other words? Or are you just...
Yes. So those projects were already funded. And so the way that the plan works is you propose a list of projects over the next 3 years that the legislature would then decide yes or no, we're going to fund these. So the ones that are already funded are beginning implementation. So with that, once those plans are approved, we start to enter into agreements with local governments. Once those agreements are approved and executed, then those projects can begin to be constructed.
Just one more question, Paul. I think you sort of answered my question with the last sentence, because I came from the port of Palm Beach, and I can tell you that the ports are very concerned about sea level rise. And I just wanted to see how you coordinate with the local entities. So it sounds like you're already doing it. So, okay, thank you.
Well, thank you. I think we have, for a guest speaker, a pinch hitter, you've answered a lot of questions, and I really appreciate the time you've taken to be with us today. Representative Overdorf, I'm sorry, I missed you. And Representative Maggard, okay, we have a few more. Okay, Representative Overdorf, you're welcome, recognized.
Thank you, Chair.
First of all, I'm just so pleased with all the DEP has been able to do with the resources that you currently have. I know we were able to get some additional FTE for y'all in this year's budget, and hopefully that will continue. But thank you very much for all that you're doing. Quick question on the reservoir south of the lake and the progress associated with it. If you could give me kind of a status of where the state side of it is on the cleansing wetland, and then a similar status with the federal government and how well or not that they're doing.
Do you have that level of detail, or is that?
So I do. I'm just trying to find my page. So the South Florida Water Management District, as you know, is working on the treatment wetland. And so the last update I received, I think we're expecting that to be completed at some point at the end of this year. The Army Corps is working on the reservoir component. As you know, that has been delayed. I think that there will be some progress seen over the next coming weeks, but I know that they are also under protest on a portion of the reservoir. So it was bid out, and the contract is now under protest. So as that is undergoing continued litigation, that continues to delay the project more. So I think we're looking at a 2030-2031 timeline, but I can follow up with you on those dates.
Just clarifying, you said 2030 to 2031?
Yes.
For a project that we approved roughly 8 years ago?
It's the Army Corps. I don't know what to tell you.
And I guess that leads me to my second question, and you may need to get back to me on this one, but what is the process, or can we as a state take over that excavation and potentially that bidding associated with, so we can have a faster progress to it and therefore have additional relief from the levels in Lake O?
So one of the components of the governor's executive order that he signed last week actually asks the South Florida Water Management, not asks, directs the South Florida Water Management District to identify opportunities to expedite Everglades projects that maybe the Corps isn't moving on as quickly as we would like to see. So while the reservoir project, that, you know, is something that we could look at, I think there's other components of that project that we could work to advance because the Corps is so down the line on the bidding process for the reservoir itself. But it's definitely something that we're looking at and trying to see if that's a viable option.
Thank you.
Representative Vice Chair Maggard.
Thank you, Chair. I'm trying to make this easy. Back in 21, we are a DEP supposed to submit to the legislators an update annually of how we're doing on our reclaim. Do you know if that's been submitted yet?
Yes.
It has. Do we have it? Does the state have it? I haven't seen it.
The report on, are you talking about Senate Bill 64?
Yes.
I believe that we submit an annual report, and I know that we submitted one in December, so I can try to get my hands on that for you.
And we're going to have, we have a few more meetings that we'll be still going through. There's so much, and I'm really glad to hear all the questions. It helps flesh out some of the issues that we want to get more detail on.
Thank you.
So, did I get everybody? Okay. Well, thank you very much, Ms. DeSercio. Thank you, and thank you for your work, and we look forward to, I know we'll be working closely together as we continue to explore these issues on a more than a surficial basis.
Absolutely.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay, next, I'll be moving on to the water supply discussion. We have St. John's River Water Management District. We were grateful to have with us Mike Register. He's the Executive Director of the St. John's River Water Management District, who will discuss Florida's hydrology. I'm really grateful for those of you who don't know Mr. Register. He's been with the St. John's River Water Management District for over 30 years, and has in his first several years as the Executive Director. I think that's a great background with a large, complex agency, and we're really grateful to have you with us here today to kind of begin our, like, kind of foundation understanding of hydrology. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Stevenson and members of the committee. Thank you for having me before you today to talk about one of my favorite subjects, especially as a water management director, water. Specifically, to provide y'all with an overview of basic hydrology and the hydrologic cycle so that we can understand that here in Florida. I think we can all agree, you know, that water is very important. In addition to it being the driving force behind all nature, without water, life just cannot exist. So we need clean, fresh water to survive and prosper. But as a fact, only fresh water only accounts for about 2.5% of the world's water, and the rest is either salt water or brackish. So it makes fresh water a very precious resource indeed. So I know I'm supposed to be talking about hydrology, and here I am talking about water, but water is basically what hydrology is all about. Hydrology is the science of how water is added to and removed from the landscape. So understanding hydrology is key to protecting the water resources of Florida. So where does our water come from? This slide here depicts the hydrologic cycle here in Florida. And let's start the discussion of the hydrologic cycle with rainfall. And you can see the little clouds represented there in the top right. It provides the fresh water to our hydrologic cycle. And in Florida, we usually have an average of between 50 and 60 inches of rainfall each year. So when you think about this part of the cycle, the rainfall, the question may come to mind, with all of this rainfall, with all of this water that's being provided, how can we ever run short of water in Florida? Well, let's look at where that rain ends up in this cycle. When it rains, where does it go? Water goes downhill. It seems like the simple answer. And it's true to some extent. But rainfall can land on a multitude of surfaces, such as the roofs of homes, pastures, water bodies, many other surfaces on the landscape. And depending on what type of surface the rain falls on, that's going to dictate its journey through this hydrologic cycle. When rain lands on impervious surfaces, or at a rate greater than what can infiltrate into the soil, it runs off. And most of this runoff will find its way down to a lake or a river, and eventually out to the ocean. Now, when development occurs, as you can see represented by some of the buildings and things here on this graphic, it increases the impervious surfaces, which increases runoff, which is why we have stormwater regulations here in Florida to ensure that this increased runoff is treated and attenuated so that it provides both water quality and flood protection. If rainfall just ran downhill and infiltrated into the ground, we wouldn't really have a cycle. We just have a down arrow. But that's not all that what happens. During its journey of all this rainfall and runoff, more than half of the rainfall actually evaporates or is transpired via plants back into the atmosphere. This evaporation is where clouds are created from the water. When clouds have developed and hold more water than can be supported by the atmosphere, rainfall occurs from the cloud to start the cycle all over again. This cycle is continuously occurring as water evaporates, forms clouds, rainfall occurs, and the cycle repeats. So to talk a little bit more about the water that is not evaporated or transpired into the atmosphere and its relationship to water supply here in the state of Florida. This is still a tremendous amount of water. But it's important to remember that our natural systems, the ecology of Florida, developed with that amount of rainfall. And so it's dependent upon it, and it takes a lot of water to support it. And that makes these resources one of the constraints that's used in Florida's water supply planning process. Another factor that affects the water supplied by the hydrologic cycle is that, as we all know, especially after these recent hurricanes, rainfall doesn't occur at an even rate throughout the year or even year to year. So to maximize the availability of water, you know, what's needed is to have a method of taking times when we have excess water and storing that so that we can use it during the drier times. Fortunately, shown up here on the screen, Florida is blessed with an immense natural storage system, its aquifer system. The superficial aquifer system shown on the graphic there, kind of highlighted in a little bit of yellow, is just below the land surface and sits above the confining layers of the lower aquifers. And this is where we typically think of as the water table. When you dig down and and you hit water, that's that superficial aquifer system. These confining layers are made up of relatively impermeable materials that prevent water from easily passing through them. And you can see they're represented here on the graphic. As you go deeper into the ground, some areas of Florida also have additional confining layers that form intermediate aquifers. They're shown again, kind of highlighted in yellow. Both of these type of aquifers are tapped into for water use in the state. Now, below these systems is Florida's largest aquifer system, the Floridan Aquifer. The Floridan Aquifer is mainly composed of limestone and dolomite. Limestone acts like a sponge, absorbing and holding water, but the texture doesn't feel like a sponge at all. It's very hard, but it's full of voids, crevices, and even caverns that not only provide space for storage, but it also allows water to move through it freely, making it a ready source for our water needs. These aquifers, including the Floridan, are replenished through a natural part of the hydrologic cycle called recharge. Recharge occurs when water seeps from the land surface down through the layers of earth into the aquifer. High recharge areas are usually where they have very little upper confinement, and you can kind of see that represented on the graphic there where the rain clouds are, and there's not a confining layer, and the recharge is moving down into that Floridan aquifer system. As water recharges from these unconfined areas, it pressurizes and puts weight on the water within the confined portions of the aquifer as you move down and to the left. Now, in some areas of the Floridan aquifer, there are breaks in the confining layers. And if the pressure in the aquifer that's held by the recharge that's forcing its way down is greater or great enough so that it can push the water above the land surface through these breaks in the confining layers, that's where it discharges and forms a spring. Water from these springs flows into other water bodies and rejoins the hydrologic cycle. Water can also be discharged from these areas when wells are drilled into the aquifer to form what's called an artesian well. In Florida, there are thousands of artesian wells where water will just freely flow out of the aquifer through the pipe if these wells are not equipped with valves to control the discharge. Now, the Floridan aquifer system is the principal source of fresh water in North and Central Florida. The Floridan aquifer is the most prolific aquifer in the world in terms of yield, and it's estimated that the volume of water in the aquifer is well over a trillion gallons. Now, recent water use in Florida indicates that approximately 75% of our water use comes from groundwater. And this highlights the importance of maintaining recharge as a part of the cycle to protect water supply. The resources shown on here and the wells and all that are all governed by our consumptive use permitting program. And that's what the tool that's utilized by the districts to ensure that the withdrawals from these aren't going to cause harm to any of the natural systems or to existing legal users. So in summary, understanding the hydrologic cycle is the first step toward ensuring a resilient water supply for Florida's growing population while protecting our precious water resources. That concludes my brief overview.
Thank you, Mr. Register. I appreciate your presentation. I actually think I got some clarification on where springs and things fit in because I've seen more basic presentations in this. Is there any questions for Mr. Register? Wow. They gave DEP all the hard questions.
I know, she used them up.
So I really appreciate it. I think this kind of also lays the foundation because you can see, and oh, we got a question. Representative Henson, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Since this is the St. John's Water Authority, can he answer my question?
I don't know if he's prepared for that. We're trying to kind of keep this on water supply today.
Could you ask him?
Would you have any observations on the?
So, if you're Oahu? Speaking to the potential removal of the Rodman Dam and the restoration of the Ocklawaha River, that's a permit application that is actually before the district right now. And so, I don't think it would be appropriate for us to take a position on that, since we would be the deciding agency for that completed and goes on its way. There is an application in house, a pending application in house. It's been in house for a number of years.
I don't know if he heard the follow-up question. The follow-up question was, so there is a permit on this?
There's an application.
An application.
That's been in house for a number of years, and that's why, because we're the deciding agency, I don't think it's really appropriate for us to comment on, you know, the pros and cons of whether or not to.
As a former county commissioner, I think that was a kind of, it skews everything else that you can't prejudge and you're considering all the information before you. So I appreciate that answer. Is there any other questions? Oh, Representative Altman, you're recognized.
Thank you. Who's making that application?
DEP.
Anything else? Well, I want to thank you for being here and for laying the foundation and for, I've worked with St. John's on a number of issues while I was a county commissioner. I have a great deal of respect for the work you do. And I'm sure everybody knows Water Management District is kind of the more localized implementer, and DEP kind of drives the policy. And you're kind of an, I guess that, I don't know if that's a fair, but in general, can you just kind of give, in addition to water supply and understanding the hydrology of Florida, just kind of the other areas that you work in and are responsible for?
So the primary responsibilities laid out both statutorily and through delegation from the Department of Environmental Protection, one is water supply planning. So we're responsible for taking a look out 20 years as a part of our water supply planning process, determining what those water demands are going to be, and then checking that versus the resources to determine can our existing resources meet that demand without causing harm to those water resources. And where the need outweighs the ability for those existing sources to provide that water, we have to develop a list of potential projects that can be implemented in order to supply that need. Mm-hmm. That then switches over to the local utilities for them to let us know which of these projects, or if they have their own project, how they're going to demonstrate that they meet that demand 20 years out. And so that's the water supply planning part of that. A key part of that process is developing those environmental constraints. And within our district, we primarily use what's known as minimum flows and levels. So we look at each water body and we determine which point at which more withdrawals would cause significant harm to that water body. And we utilize that in our water supply planning process with our models to be able to determine where that sustainable yield is and how much projects are necessary in order to meet that demand. So that's our water supply planning part of it. We also, through delegation from DEP, work with the Environmental Resource Permitting Program. And that's the plan or the program that regulates water quality and flood protection associated with development. So anytime there's a development of a certain size or type, we have an operating agreement with DEP where they do portions of those and we do others. But subdivisions, commercial developments, things like that fall to the Water Management District. And as a part of that, we have to show that they, or they have to show to us in order to get the permit, that they're not going to cause a violation of water quality standards from their discharge, that they're not going to cause adverse on-site or off-site flooding so that they have enough stormwater management systems and that they're adequate to prevent that from occurring. And they also have to show that they're not going to have adverse wetland impacts that aren't mitigated. So if they are going to impact wetlands, they have to demonstrate, you know, whatever impacts those are, they're doing mitigation that's going to offset those totally so that it's a no net loss in wetland function for those areas. And
thank you. Oh, Representative Hart, did you have a question?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I really did not have a question, but as you continue to speak, can you tell me, or if you're even involved, in what happened down in Tampa with Piney Point? Are you all, is there something happening?
So he's
this
not,
water?
He doesn't, he's like out of the district, and this is, that's water pollution, which is more DEP's purview.
Is there over there?
So, but we're going to have a whole, I mean, this is, so the end of that's a big, big issue, but, you know, actually, I don't know if you notice, but like the recharge areas, if you don't protect the recharge areas, then pollution is going down into your and eroding your fresh water, which affects water supply. It all kind of goes together, but we had to start somewhere. But even though we're talking about water supply, if you look at that, you get the idea of why, if we don't protect our renewable freshwater source, then people are going to be paying for additional treatment. You have a degradation of environment and things like that. So I really appreciate the presentation today. And I hope that it provided a good foundation. I appreciate all the interest. And if I don't see any other questions, thank you. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
And members, I believe that concludes the information before us today. And I've had several members come and talk to me about issues and things that are important to their community. If you haven't done it, DEP and your water management districts have emails that you can get on targeted information. I get updates on Piney Point, like monitoring every week, I think. And so it's really, there's a lot of good information out there available, so much. And you can see how blessed we are to have the abundant water resources we have and why it's important to take care of it. And that brings us to the end of our agenda today. And with that, Representative Gonzalez-Pittman. Is she here? Representative Gonzalez-Pittman moves, we rise. And with that, we are adjourned.